Okay, we are in our final shiur on Sefer Bereishit, also our final shiur of Hamidrasha QC, except Bezrat Hashem, our final shiur on Torah, on Parshat HaAzinu, and Vezot HaBracha, what we hope to be our concluding dinner in a few weeks. But let's finish off the semester and the Sefer very strong with our last shiur on Parshat Vayechi, and wrap up our loose ends, wrap up all of the lasting disparate parts, which is actually the topic of shiur, in this last shiur on Bereishit. First, let's recap where we left off last time, the question that we left off on last time. We talked about how Parshat Vayechi is properly titled because as Sefer Bereishit is Maaseh Avot, Siman Labanim, that all of Sefer Bereishit is starting from Bereishit, literally the beginning of time, setting Maaseh Avot, Siman Labanim all the way through until Acharit HaYamim, the end of days, and he who embodies the seamless transition from Olam Hazeh to Olam Haba in the end of days is Yaakov Avinu, the Ish Emet, who's true from Aleph, the beginning of Bereishit, to Mem, the middle of Bereishit, to Tav, all the way to the end of Bereishit, from the beginning to the middle to the end of history, from the beginning to the middle to the end of life. That's who Yaakov Avinu was. He was the Ish Emet, Yaakov Avinu Lomait. And therefore, we said he is inherently that Ish HaChayim. That's why his parsha is Parshat Vayechi, and that's why the last parsha of Sefer Bereishit, even though it's about the end of history, is Vayechi Yaakov. It's because he is Chai even into Olam Haba. And we even went through our entire narrative of Sefer Bereishit, which we started last September, all the way through now, where it started with the choice between the Eitz HaDa'at Tov V'Ra and the Eitz HaChayim. We chose the Eitz HaDa'at Tov V'Ra, and Ra overtook the world. We moved more and more and more toward Tov to get back to Gan Eden, and the goal is to get back to the Eitz HaChayim. And he who embodies the Eitz HaChayim is Yaakov Avinu again, Yaakov Avinu Lomait, Yaakov Avinu who is the person of Chayim, Yaakov Avinu who is the epitome of Vayechi. That was the opening paragraph. And the majority of the rest of the parsha before the physical death of Yaakov, even though he lives on eternally, the rest of the parsha deals with our lingering plot threads. We have 12 of them. What are they called? The Shvatim. And we dove into the third section of the Parsha, which deals with what we put up on the board as the brachot given to the Shvatim, because we call it that because of the weird way that that paragraph is structured. Take a look again in source number one in your sheets or in your chumashim, let's not pretend. Source number one in your sheets, Perek Mem Tet Pasuk Aleph. Vayikra Yaakov el Banav. Yaakov called to his children, Vayomer, He'asvu v'agida lachem et asher yikra etchem b'acharit yamim. Gather together and I will tell you that which will happen at the end of days. And that he wanted to tell them at the end of days. And yet, the next two psukim, Hikatzvu v'shim'u b'nei Yaakov v'shim'u el Yisrael avichem. Gather together and hear the words of Yaakov and hear the words of Yisrael, your father. Ruvein b'chori atakochi v'reishit mi'vachule. He then gives brachot. That it's a total non sequitur. The thesis statement doesn't follow with the rest of the paragraph. He wanted to tell them at the end of days, and then he goes and gives brachot. What's the deal? And so we quoted a chazal that addresses this directly. And we saw that chazal in source number two. Again, we're reading it a little bit quicker because we saw this at the end of Shir last time. Source number two. In Masechet Pesachim, in the underline, to Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, Vayikra Yaakov el Banav, Vayomer he'asu v'agid lachem, Bikesh Yaakov legalot lebanav kitzei yamim. That the whole goal is that Yaakov even wanted to tell them at the end of days. Parentheses, which makes sense, because we're in Parshat Vayechi, which is the end of Sefer Bereishit. Maaseh Avot Siman Labanim, the whole parsha is about the end of days. And so Yaakov, in this parsha, wanted to tell his children about the end of days. But what happened? V'nistalkan menu shchina, the shchina left him. Amar Shema Chas V'Shalom Yesh B'Mitzati P'sul. Maybe Chas V'Shalom there is in my bed a P'sul, meaning there's a P'sul in my children. And that makes sense because there's precedent for that. Abraham, she yatzai menu Yishmael, like Abraham had Yishmael who had to be removed from the system. V'avi Yitzchak, she yatzai menu Esav, and like my father Yitzchak who had Esav who had to be removed from the system. Maybe that I have somebody who needs to be removed from the system as well. Amar lo Vanav, but his children said to him, no! Shema Yisrael, hear Israel, and again, Yisrael here means Yisrael, Saba means Yaakov, you hear Yisrael, hear Yaakov. Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Amru, Kishem She'ein Belibcha Elechad, just like Yaakov, in your heart there is only one, there is only a Kadosh Baruch Hu, so too Kach Ein Belibeinu El Achad, there is only one in our hearts, and that is the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Ve'otasha Apatach Yaakov Avinu Ve'amar, Yaakov Avinu then said, Baruch Shem Kivod Ma'otol Yalam Va'ed, Chazak Chazak Ve'nit Chazek. Except not. We had two questions that were left over last time, which was, we came here to address a problem. We had a thesis statement and a body paragraph that didn't answer that thesis statement. The thesis statement was, acharit ha'anim. The body paragraph was, brachas. So the Gemara says, I'm going to tell you what happened. He did want to tell him at the end of days, but he was worried that there was a psul. But the conclusion of the Gemara is that there was no psul. In which case, we're back to our original problem, which was that he should have told him at the end of days. The Gemara doesn't answer the question it sets out to answer. How is this whole beautiful story of them saying Shema and him being reassured and they know that everything is fine, so if everything's fine, tell him at the end of days. The Shechina shouldn't have gone, the Shechina should have stayed there, whatever, it should have been fine. Even, not even worse, perhaps a deeper level because it's more textually based than the answer of the Gemara itself, right? We exaggerated last time I was saying, so what, they all got together and said, what's the firmest pasuk we can quote, and they quoted Shema and that somehow reassures him? Everybody knows Shema. Parentheses, not clear how they knew Shema at all, so it's a different favorite Devarim, but that's not the problem right now, right? Everybody knows Shema. Why is Shema the answer to that question? How does that tell him that there's no soul? Anybody can make that up. Yeah, when Esav was busy tricking Yitzchak and tricking him that he was so frum, he was pulling much, much more fancy schmancy halachot out of his back pocket to try to trick Yitzchak into thinking that he was frum. Shema Yisrael is a pasuk. It's one of the most central pasuk possible. How does that tell him that there's no soul in his children? So that's what we want to address. So coming back to Yaakov Avinu, now we'll slow down. Let's come back to Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov Avinu, who we said is our embodiment of our Esav Hayim. And we pointed out the fact that it's very apropos to use that mashal for Yaakov, because Yaakov produces what? Not B'nai Yisrael, be more specific in this context. Louder. 12 Shvatim. And what does a Shevet mean? A Shevet means a branch. He produces 12 Shvatim that extend from Yaakov. What is the nature of the distinction here between Yaakov Avinu and the 12 Shvatim? That Yaakov Avinu, everything seems to be fine, but there is this fear that there's something wrong with these Shvatim. What's the problem with the Shvatim? What's inherently going to be? What are we nervous about with regards to the Shvatim that seems to be what's shifting the weight in this Parsha, that we don't just end with Yaakov, Vayichi Yaakov, and have one paragraph end of the Parsha? What are we struggling with the Banim, with the children of Yaakov, with the Shvatim? And what is the resolution that is achieved in the context of this paragraph that allows us to move to our concluding paragraph of the Sefer and wrap up Sefer Bereishit? And how does that link into the story that we just saw in the Gemara? You look confused. Okay, right. That's what we're hopefully going to do together. We're going to think this out together. So, the structure of 12 of the Shvatim is an important structure. The structure of 12 revolving around the 13th, if we move a little bit away from the 8th mashal, of the tree mashal, the idea of 12 revolving around a 13th is actually something that we know becomes part and parcel of the essence of Klal Yisrael itself. How so? When we have the Mishnah, you're saying the same thing, right? That's how we actually organize in the desert. And we don't just organize as 12 Shvatim, but how does it work in the desert? We have Machanot, and we have Digalim, where you have, in the actual reality of the Machaneh Shekhinah, those who can reach back either to when you last saw Sefer Bamidbar, or last fall, when we learned Sefer Bamidbar, 3 semesters ago, you have the Mishkan in the middle with Sheva Levi all around it, and then you have the 4 Machanot, one in the north, one in the south, one in the east, and one in the west, and each one of those has 3 Shvatim. One day I'm going to get these down, but in the in the south you have Degel Machaneh Reuven. You have Reuven, Shimon, and Gad. In the west, you have Ephraim, Menashe, Binyamin. The north, Dan, Asher, and Naphtali. And in the east, you have Degel Machaneh Yehuda. You have Yehuda, Yisachar, and Zebulun Yehuda, who is leading the pack. But you have these four machanot.
This is what machanesh shinah, these four devalim. So we have the structure of 12. Without bringing them in at the same time. Right? This again, 12 revolving around 1. So the idea of the 12 shvatim surrounding Yaakov, these 12 shvatim surrounding the 13th point, or these 12 shvatim surrounding what becomes 13th point in Levi, which is also why it's so critical that what happens before the brachas of the parsha, what was part 2 of this parsha? What was part 2 in our parsha? It's in your notes from Monday. It's also in your chumashim before the paragraph of the brachot. I'm asking you to remember what happened. We went to the midbar together. Thank you. The fact that we talked about Menashe and Ephraim become to Yaakov as like Reuben and Shimon. They become shvatim. So that way, yes, there are 12 shvatim revolving around Yaakov. And then when Yaakov passes away, what ends up happening is that we maintain this evidently essential structure of 13, where Levi becomes in the center. How do we still have 12? Because Yosef divides into Ephraim and Menashe. That's how we maintain this reality, this seemingly essential reality. It's the same source as last time. This essential reality of this 12 shvatim revolving around the center point, which is the Mishkan, which has Levi there. Why is Levi the one who's going to be connected to the Mishkan? What about his name indicates that he's going to be the one who's going to be connected to the Mishkan? Ma kashur l'shoresh shel Levi. Where does it come from? Why did his mother name him that?
He's joined.
Not joined.
Isn't that like now I have someone to join with me?
From now yilaveni ishi. Now my husband will escort me, will go with me. Like a livaya back in the day, Lehavdil, used to be that they would actually walk the coffin outside of the city to the graveyard, and they would be milaveh the mate till they got to the graveyard. But a livaya or Levi means to escort. Levi is the one, although his name again in the challenging root, when we go back to how they were named in the context of Rachel and Leah, means now hopefully my husband will escort me and be close to me. But his name means to escort. He then becomes the one to, the other flip side of his name is that he becomes the one to escort the Shekhinah, escort the Mishkan. He's the one who's milaveh the Shekhinah. And he takes center stage in that way. But either way, again, we have the parts that are surrounding the whole. We have the tree that's breaking up into its branches. What we're emphasizing here is that we have the center, the root, that's breaking itself up, that's dividing itself up into its parts, into its chalakim. Evidently, the source, the root, is fine. Or if you will, the trunk is fine. The centerpiece is fine. That's Yaakov. That's what Yaakov represents at this point. We know that Yaakov is fine. Remember the pasuk we kept on quoting again and again and again? Vayavo Yaakov Shalem Yerushchem. Yaakov had already reached his Shlemut. He is complete. What's not complete? What still has a journey ahead of it? What's still not in a fixed state? We talked about a few weeks ago. Louder. The shvatim. The chalakim that come out of that hole. Yaakov is shalim, but he breaks up into his chalakim. He divides up into his 12 parts. And somehow the fact that they are 12 parts of that hole, somehow that's going to be a problem. What's the problem with being a part? Okay, but inherently, there's no way that a part ever could have been shalem. Are there? And is that a problem? Why? Why is that generally a problem?
But I don't know if it's a problem, but generally that's what happens.
What happens?
Some parts are
shalem. Okay. And? So what?
Jealousy.
You're saying it's not necessarily problematic that some are stronger and some are weaker, but the ones that are weaker might be jealous of the ones that are stronger. Is that what you're saying? You said jealousy. I don't know if you're just throwing out words and hoping that they would stick, and I would fill it out for you. But yes, so you're saying jealousy. And what did you say? Fighting, which comes from, use a different word that we keep using again and again and again by the Shvatim, that goes along with jealousy. hatred. We keep talking about that kin'ah and that sin'ah. This is where everything that we've been talking about from the beginning of the semester plays itself out. That we've been talking about since we talked about the stones under Yaakov's head, since we talked about the issues with Lavan, since we talked about the issues with Yaakov being Soleh al Yerechod, that he's walking with a limp. This is where it all comes together. The issue with the parts is not, parts are not inherently problematic. But when the parts conflict with each other, when each part doesn't recognize that it's a part, doesn't dignify its own unique station in life, and is either jealous of another one's part, of a different part, hates another part, is unwilling to harmonize with another part, that's when things become problematic. When a part thinks that it's a whole and doesn't recognize that it's a part that needs to be part of a harmonious system, that's where problems begin. When there's no harmony amongst the system, then the system breaks down. There's nothing inherently wrong with a part, but parts create the possibility for there to be massive mistakes. When I'm a part of a greater system and I think that my perspective is the only perspective. My job is the only job that matters, or the only job that there is. You don't know what you're doing. I've got it covered. I'm going to do everything. I don't need you, or I should be doing what you're doing, or why are you allowed to do that, or why is that your job? Issues of a lack of perspective. Lack of perspective, by the way, that goes back to where do we say that broken perspectives are born from? Even earlier back, go all the way back. Even before then. Adam and Chava, that's always a safe bet. Now I know you're just guessing. That was a safe bet, right? When did we talk about that last semester? Remember we talked about how Perek Aleph of Bereshit is the objective view of the world? And then Perek Bet, the retelling of the story, inserts the subjectivity of the world once we eat from the Eitz HaDaat Tovara. That's still living in the world of the subjective, of the personal. It's not clear exactly what the right answer is. It's not clear exactly whether something is tov or ra, what the nature of reality is. Subjective perspective can be incredibly corruptive. And so a part has the challenge and the danger of that subjectivity of perspective, of things like hatred and jealousy creeping in, and destroying the ability of the whole to work harmoniously as one. That's the danger in the context of the Shvatim. Literally, coming back to what you said, the fact that they're not equal, that's the source of the problem. That each one of them is different, that they do have different goals. Who's going to be king? Yehuda, that's set. That's Yehuda's job. When we get to Yisachar and Zvulun, one of them's going to work and one of them's going to learn. Which one's right? Both. But if the people who are supposed to work are jealous of the ones that are learning, or if the people that are learning want to get out there and are tired of some of the base measures and they don't want that chaylek, then you have problems. Jealousy, hatred, a lack of perspective about what my goal is in the world, that's exactly where the problems can crop up, is the fact that they're not equal. But that's also the source of the solution itself. When I accept my share in the world, then I live up to that share, I do what I need to do, but I also am then able to accept the share of the other. I need to get past that. Get past the hatred, get past the jealousy, get past the subjective perspective, and to be able to objectively recognize that I, like all of my fellow chalakim, have a purpose in this world, have a goal in this world, and if we all do what we each need to do individually, together, then the world can reach its ultimate tikkun. That's what's happening here at the end of Sefer Bereshit. This is where we see the final tension that we kept on pulling out that I referenced before. Yaakov Avinu is Shalem. Yaakov Avinu is given the name Yisrael. He becomes the paradigm of Yisrael. And then he comes Shalem. Vayavo Yaakov Shalem Yershchem. He is complete. He is good. He is the Ishemet. He is Lomate. He goes on to the next world. He's fine. But remember, that same Yaakov that was Shalem, what did we say a minute ago? We reminded ourselves a minute ago. That same Yaakov who is Vayavo Yaakov Shalem. At the same time that he's Shalem, what else is he in that Parsha? So Leah al Yerecho, that was the same Yaakov that was limping on the thigh. And we talked about how the thigh, the Yerech, the Yotzei Yerech Yaakov. That the Yerech is indicative of the moving into the future of children. That the damage that was done to Yaakov was not to Yaakov himself and the core of Yaakov, but that his children might have a problem, that problem that was planted by Lavan. Bikesh Lavan Lakor to call that there was no guarantee that the children were going to be able to pull it together. And that's the issue here as well. That's the question here as well. Are the brothers going to be able to get past their hatred and jealousy for one another? Understand their unique circumstances, their unique goals, their unique kochot, their unique purpose and destiny in this world, and harmonize together to come back to a one of Klal Yisrael. That's the question. How is Yaakov Avinu's response to the Shvatim? How is that telling us what the Acharei Yitzchak looks like? Yaakov says, "Hey, as v'agidat asher yikrat kam b'acharei yamim," and then he goes and gives them brachot. How is that an answer to the question? How is that describing acharei yamim? What is Yaakov Avinu doing? Either everybody's super tired, or I'm super unclear. The only way that we get to Acharei Yamim is if every single part understands its tafkid. So what does Yaakov Avinu do? He defines each one of the Shvatim. He goes one by one through each of the Shvatim and gives them a bracha that's uniquely linked to their koach that they're going to need to aspire to and achieve over the course of the history, not just of themselves as an individual, but their shevet as a whole. Because when each one of those shvatim hears their bracha, hears a reflection of their essence, and then does live up to that, that's what a vision of the end of days looks like. But it's not just about each shevet living up to its potential, living up to its destiny. It's about them living up to their destiny and also coming back together as one. And so what does Yaakov say? Go back to that first pasuk. Source number one, Perek Mem Teh Pasuk Aleph. Vayikra Yaakov el banav vayomer. Yaakov says to his children, "Hey asfu." What does "hey asfu" mean? Gather together. That is, in and of itself, he is telling them what the end of days looks like. You want to know what the end of days looks like? Hey, Asko, you're going to need to gather together. But it's not enough to stand in close proximity to each other. Hey, Asko, is not enough. What's the next word? What does the Akita mean? To tell. What else does it mean? What's the name of the bus company in Israel? Why is it called Eged? What does Eged mean? Is it either they talk a lot? No. Does it mean travel? What does the bus company do? This uses a weird variety, but what does the bus company do? It unifies the country. It draws it all together. Like, to use an example from Torah, because we don't use examples from modern Hebrew because it's not Kodesh, right? To use an example from Torah, that there's a mitzvah of la'agid to bind together the arba'amin. If you take each one of the four species on Sukkot on their own, the lulav, the etrog, the hadas, the arba'amin, you don't feel the mitzvah. You have to be la'adilotam, to hold them in one hand, not just to bring them all in the same place, but to bind them together. So Yaakov, he was saying, you want to know what the end of these looks like? When you're he'asfu, the agida, that is the Acharei. When you each live up to your unique potential, draw together and bind yourself ourselves one to another, that is the end of things. But Yaakov is nervous. Maybe one of them is not meant to be there. Maybe one of them is not going to live up to that. Maybe one of them is not going to complete that. And so we get this story in the Gemara, where he shares his fears with them. What is the Shvatim's response? What is the response to the Shvatim that they say in unison? Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu Hashem, Echad.
Now we can start to pull it together, pun intended.
Echad. With that large Dalet, if you look in the Sefer Torah in your Chumash. The large dalet separates the dalet away from the letter. It means one layer of meaning is not that God is one. Of course, there is one God. No, not that there's one God as opposed to many gods. There is only one. God is the only thing there is. Hashem Echad Kevaki is it. There is His oneness is the only thing that exists because He takes all of the disparate elements of the world. Mazel le'achid or ach. Means to bring together, to unify. He's Ach Dalet. The Dalet is taking all of the disparate elements of the world. The number four is always about breaking up into parts. When we talk in English, we say when something is scattered all throughout the world, we say they're scattered to the four corners of the earth. In Lashon HaKodesh, we talk about the Arba Ruchot HaOlam, scattering to the four winds. That's where it comes from. Dalet is always the letter of scattering, of moving away from the centerpiece. That's why the letter Dalet in Hebrew, wouldn't you know it, looks like an axis pointing in all four directions. The structure of the letter itself is all about pulling away as far as possible from the center point. Echad is about unifying all four sides to the center. They're saying that they understand that unity needs to be. Where might they have four sides that all need to unify?
That's the machanos.
That they're all going to need to come together. Okay, fine. Four machanot, that's really cute, but how many shvatim are there? How many? There are 13 shvatim if you count Levi and Ephraim and Manasseh. And this is after the Ephraim and Manasseh story. And wouldn't you know it?
When you take Echad, you get 1 and 8. And 4, you get?
13.
You get 13.
The gematria of Echad itself is 13. How do you achieve true oneness? Is when you take that oneness, you break it up, klal pratu klal, another concept we've kept on emphasizing again and again throughout the year. When you take that oneness, you break it up into all of its elements, each one achieves its full potential, and then they bind back together to create that oneness. To show that it's really all part of one. Each is unique, but by coming together, they are really components of one actual thing, of one piece, of one unique oneness. That's that Echad. Additionally, Echad shares the same gematria as,
famously, or not,
Ahava. The only way to truly achieve unifying and coming together is through a reality of Ahava. To get over the kin'ah, to get over the sin'ah, to get to a place of Ahava, which is Echad, which is the unity of those 13 pieces of those Shvatim. Still not convinced? Why Echad? How many children did the Imahot have? Leah and Rachel. Leah has how many? No, how many does Leah have? Six. How many does Rachel have?
Two. We have the name
Imahot. How many do the Shvachot have?
They have four.
And then you have Levi, who becomes the centerpiece, or Yaakov, however you want to play it, because again, Yaakov gets switched out for Levi. Whether you see it as the unification of the brothers and Yaakov, or the brothers and Levi himself, right? When you replace Levi with Ephraim and Manasseh and the Chetz, that Echad is indicative of the nature of Echad is the unification of all of the children of Yaakov coming together. That's the Echad that we're trying to reach. So when Yaakov Avinu is worried that his children are not going to get to a reality of the end of days, they're not choosing any random from Pasuk. They're saying, no, Shema Yisrael, hear Yisrael, hear Yaakov. Yud Kei Vav Kei, Hashem is Elokeinu, Hashem is what we're all about. And we recognize that the only way to create a giloy, a revelation of God's oneness in this world that is destined to come about in the end of days, is when we live up to a reality of Echad, which is the unification of the four camps, which is the unification of all disparity in the world coming into oneness, which is the unification of all of the different parts of the Shvatim, all of the individuals in each one of the children of the Shvatim, the children of the of Imaot, coming together and coming together. How are they going to come together? Through what means? Not through Sinah, not through Kinah, but we're going to come through a reality of Ahava. There was so much power in that, when quoting that Dafka one Pasuk. And then Yaakov Avinu, recognizing that they understand what it takes to get to the end of days, goes and tells them, what is the vision of the end of days? Where you all live up to each and every component of that Echad and truly bring it back together into its oneness. It's going to take a process of going through, drawing back another term, one of our other big terms that we keep discussing over the course of the year. It's going to take to go through a long process of overcoming the four galuyot. Why four galuyot? Back to our Dalet. What is there in the world? Echad. Echad is the truth of the world. The reason why there are dafka for galuyot is because they challenge that oneness. What letter, what number embodies challenging oneness and unity? Dalet. Nothing is unified. Nothing is central. Everything is disparate. Everything is moving away, as far away from the as possible from the center point. You're going to need to go through a process of going through all of these four galuyot, all of this large dalet, and unifying everything together, unifying yourselves together, bringing a oneness to the world in the light of the world trying to prove again and again and again, harsher and harsher and more difficult ways, there isn't a oneness in the world, that there isn't an ultimate truth in the world. We talked about this in our Toldot Shirim at length. How broken the world is in that respect. In a postmodern world, in a world of pluralism, in a world that's so focused on everything is different, we've gotten to a place where literally everybody has to be unique and separate, and I do things my way, there's nothing. I do things what I want, when I want, where I want. I'm my own person, and I'm going to define it by being so different in this way or so different in that way, in all the ways that don't count, but make sure that we don't look anything like one another. We've lost any sense of achdut. The world has never been, I left my phone in the car, I was actually happy about that. There's never been, I was going to hold my phone, we've never been more connected in this world than we've ever been before. And we've never been as isolated and confused and not clear on what our identity is, who we are, why we're here, what we're doing. It's a generation, as we talked about again at length in those Toldot Shirim, we've never had a more depressed and aimless generation as we've ever had before. Where we pretend we know who we are, we have no idea who we are, we have no idea what our goal is, where we're headed, and we feel aimless, and we feel alone. That's the galut of Esav, the final stage of Esav trying to pull us all apart. Not even in different groups, every individual, pull every individual apart. And that we need to combat that galut. Brought together, Ach Dalet Echad, to come back as one. That's what we're meant to bring to this world. That's what we're meant to show the world. Shema Yisrael, that in our lives, in Olam Hazeh, even in Olam Hazeh, Yud Kei Vav Kei, this beyondness, this Kadosh Baruch Hu who is beyond, He is Elokeinu. We bear His oneness in this world until eventually in the world to come, we will show, that's how Rashi understands it, that we will show Yud Kei Vav Kei, that oneness, that He is the only oneness that exists, that everything comes back, unites to that oneness that is the Kadosh Baruch Hu. The way that we do that, the way that Kali Yisrael achieves that, is when we come together in the structure that, in the structure that's presented in Sefer Midbar, in the structures that are presented in the desert, where we have every single shape that has its own unique space, its own unique placement, its own unique part in the structure, but that structure is intentionally designed to be unified around the oneness of God, which is embodied in the Mishkan. That's what Yaakov Avinu is telling them at the end of days is. And when they say Shema Yisrael Hashem Echad, that's what they're indicating to Yaakov, that they understand. Then Sefer Bereshit can come to a close. We got out of Gan Eden, we saw the descent into Ra, we sifted away all of the generations of the world till we found the pearl in the sand, which was Abraham. We selected Yishmael out of Abraham and got to Yitzchak. We selected Esav out of Yitzchak and got to Yaakov. Yaakov became the paradigm Yisrael, Ma'asev Otziman Lebanim, and took us all the way till the end of days. But now we need to set the foundations of the stones, those avanim, those banim that are avanim, that are going to be the foundations not just of Beit Yaakov, but of Beit Yisrael, and of the Beit HaMikdash itself. And now that we're assured not only that Klal Yisrael and Yaakov is going to make it to the end of days, but now that we're assured in the end of the Parsha that all of those avanim are kasher, that all of those stones, that we go right back to where we started the semester with, all of those stones that Yaakov put under his head, those 12 stones that join together into one, once he's guaranteed that that is going to happen, once we're guaranteed that that's going to happen at the end of Sefer Bereshit, then we can end the Sefer of Ma'aseh Avot Siman Lebanim, and now we're ready to go and actually build Klal Yisrael and Beit Yisrael B'Gadol, the manifestation of that primordial Yaakov, Yisrael, and the Shvatim. And we're able to bring Sefer Bereshit to its end. That concludes our whole narrative, that concludes our through line of Sefer Bereshit, and thus concludes our exploration of Sefer Bereshit. B'ezrat Hashem, we should be able to all, each and every one of us, have clarity on who we are, why we're here, that we're reflective of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's oneness in this world. We should bring Hashem Elokeinu, that Yudkei Vavkei is my own personal HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that I'm bringing into this world, that I'm funneling into this world, to combat that sense of emptiness that the outside world imposes upon us, to push that away, and to figure out who we are, why I'm here, what my destiny is, what I am meant to accomplish, very relevant to these days of Sefirat HaOmer. Who am I? How do I rule over my own internal world, and what am I meant to accomplish? Through understanding what I'm meant to accomplish, be able to respect what everybody else needs to accomplish, help support them and raise them up and work with them to accomplish that goal, and to hopefully unify with them, all of us unifying together as the 600,000 Avanim of Klal Yisrael, to be able to unify together to be that Beit HaMikdash that we're hoping and davening for that should come, Be'ezrat Hashem here by Aminu in the end of days. We should, Be'ezrat Hashem, be able to see, finally, Yaakov and Yosef truly joined together. Those two etzim that are talked about in that Chazon in Yechezkel. Like we see in Parshat Vayigash, that Yosef and Yehuda come together, representing the totality of the Shvatim coming together, leading the way to an ultimate reality of Mashiach ben David, that we've been talking about all the way from the beginning when we talked about how Adam HaRishon is an acronym for, according to Kabbalah, Aleph is Adam, Dalet is David in the center of history, and Mem is Mashiach stemming from David. That we should be able to pave that way all the way down through the Mashiach, through the Shvatim coming together, recognizing Yehuda's place, recognizing Yosef's place, and paving that way to again bring us together, Be'ezrat Hashem, in a oneness to overcome that Tzinat Chinam and the challenges that we have as Klal Yisrael, unified together and bring out a reality of He'asfu va'agida et asher yikra etchem ba'acharit yamim. Shkoach, everybody.